Hey, everybody,
so
welcome.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Did you want to do the intro? You can if you want to.
No, I didn't. I forgot about the intro. Go ahead.
Hey, welcome back to Mind Vector Podcast. If you've been with us, please give us a like and a subscribe if you've been enjoying the content. Leave your thoughts below in the comments.
So I wanted to ask you again about meditation. If there's anything in there about meditating on your own death.
Yeah.
Or your own demise. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a, there's an exercise like that in Buddhism. This is more so along the lines of thinking about it. And the exercises, they would actually have monks sit around cemeteries and things like that, or imagine themselves losing everything. Like, it's almost like, you know, it's the psychedelic world. You ever heard of ego death?
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like trying to imagine what that would be like, so you can take the lessons from it that you're not going to be here forever, and how would you live if that were the case, and what would no longer be important if that was the case. Because when you think about everybody being on the clock, your values change. So
right. So one of the most transformative courses I ever took in my career as a psychology student was psychology of death and dying. And in the course, they had us like literally journal, and we had to write our own wills. We had to write, you know, just different topics on our death and like our family and life and just everything from the perspective of being dead. And it was just really it changed my whole perspective on life in general, because it's like, damn, it's like the ultimate, you know, change.
The final destination.
Yeah. Yeah, you're dead. So I really, that was one of the most important classes I think I ever took, if not the most important class.
Yeah, death is one of those things that does have kind of a liberating, if that sounds really edgelordy, but if you kind of think about it in its own way, it liberates you of bullshit, basically, because you start remembering what really matters.
Right.
And when it comes to psychology, a lot of, you know, that's how I got into Buddhism, is because the crossover between psychology and Buddhism is pretty large. Like, you can leave all the religious stuff, rebirth, karma, all of that out of Buddhism and still get a lot of value out of it, because it's almost like a philosophy / mental health program.
Yeah.
More than anything. So
yeah, it's super reflective.
That's very close to what they try to teach monks when they're doing their death meditation. And the process is pretty similar. Like, you imagine yourself getting into a coffin and everybody around you is staring or crying. And, you know, if you've been an asshole, possibly cheering. So you have that and you imagine it going dark and it never returns. It just, that's the end of that episode. So
for forever. But it's what's interesting is that death is like one of those things that most people don't want to think about or talk about. It's just super uncomfortable. So a lot of people kind of like avoid thinking about it altogether. Yeah. Unless there's like a funeral going on and it's like, yep, we're here. This person died. But if you think about it, it's one of the best ways to like shift your mindset, because death in life, it's like you kill off all the bullshit and then you're just like reborn. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, in Buddhism, there's a big focus on things having a cycle to them. So with the Eastern religions, the cycle is kind of the third thing that they always include. And our way of thinking, we always focus on the beginning and the end. But the third portion of that is the continuation or the cycle. So when you think of something ending, there's always something that can come out of it. And that's something I've been thinking about more when I think about Taoism. I got into reading a little bit about it after listening to an Alan Watts lecture where he brought up this thing called the negativity principle.
Mm.
And I couldn't figure out what he was talking about, so I just tried to look it up a bit, and eventually I ended up just listening to the entire audiobook. And basically it's this notion that it's like a duality thing where the opposite can produce It's counterintuitive, but it's, and that's what the entire Tao Te Ching is written as. It's written almost like a series of these events, like from war comes peace, and peace comes out of, war comes out of peace, and there's a cycle to these things. And when you kind of incorporate that on a larger scale, you can relax and realize that all of it's going to be okay, because this is just how it goes. So
the calm before the storm and after the storm.
Yeah, and there's another phrase too, that after this storm, the sun always comes after the storm. That's the phrase. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, can't rain all the time.
Can't rain all the time.
Yeah,
but
that's so good.
And if people are able to kind of take those lessons from realizing that nothing is permanent, they can save themselves a lot of suffering. I mean, it comes with everything. It comes with relationships. It comes with
raising kids.
Raising kids.
That scream, you know, and cry.
It comes with just everything in life is like that, and one day it's all gonna fade away.
Yep.
So,
which is that's actually kind of like the mentality that I started shifting to whenever they're into chaos. When shit's hitting the fan here, it's like, what would I rather be living this moment right now, or them not being here at all? You know what I mean? Like, if they had never been born, or if I lose them in some way, like if they're just like some tragic accident happens or something. Like, what's the worst alternative? And then it's like, oh shit, that just kind of makes me like kind of like wake up and like, okay, no, this is good, this is okay. We're imagining the worst case scenario.
And another thing that helps too in the moment is to realize that sometimes the suffering can bring you peace in the future. Like, you kind of go through it in a backwards way. Like, at least for me, I didn't know too many people that have died. The only people I knew really that died were my parents, but I wasn't really close to them. And had a pretty bad relationship with my mother. So when she passed away, it was kind of a weird thing for me, because I felt like there were things I was supposed to feel but didn't, because the relationship was so bad. But I've seen with my other friends that are really close that have lost their parents that are still grieving.
Yeah.
Like, I feel lucky that at a young age I had all those problems, because I just went through the grieving process in a different way. Because... Right. You know, they have this phrase in Buddhism that the glass is already broken. It's just not everybody realizes it. Like, you know, relationships, people, everything changes. Everything's in a state of flux. So when it came to that, I was lucky because I don't have to suffer from that grief. It's a little awkward because everyone's like, you know, why aren't you grieving or whatever? And it's like, well, you know, all the years of childhood, all the... the years of neglect and all these other things, they kind of, that's when I grieved. So I got all that out of the way at a young age. And it was just the body catching up to the emotion, the quality of the relationship, so to say.
Mm.
So sometimes when bad things happen, if you start looking for the bright side immediately, that's how you can really change your mind. So, and it's hard to do, because when shit's hitting the fan, you don't want to sit there and be all zen and philosophical and shit. Well, that's when you really need it. So
it's hard. It's like it's been a quick fix for me, thinking of the worst case scenario alternative, because I can't just sit there, and sometimes I don't want to just sit there and take a deep breath and whatever and wait. But it's like instantly I would think of that. But there was a little bit of a resistance to it. And I didn't read about it. It just kind of popped up one day. It's like, what would happen? I think I was washing the dishes or something. But imagining, if you only take it so far, you may think that you're idealizing the idea of them being gone. You know, like me, I'm talking about my kids.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't see it through past that, then I could see it seeming like I was wishing for it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like if I just only if I only just touched on it and I didn't take it any further to where to the other side of the upside, then it would be like I would think that I was wishing for their demise, and that's not that that was not the case.
People,
so I can see why people would shy away. Yeah,
that's another thing too. I like to emphasize that you are not your thoughts, because when people have bad thoughts, they immediately start the guilt cycle.
Yeah, and I was having that.
Once you're like feeling guilty about a thought, then now you have thoughts of guilt, and it just creates another emotional cycle that's nothing but suffering and ruminating. So,
like, especially when my first one was really little, when she was a little baby, and there was like sleep deprivation, all kinds of deprivation on my part. I thought there was something wrong with me because I just wanted it to stop, and like the only way that I could see it stopping was for her to not exist in a way. And it was hard for a while because I felt guilty about it because she was so little, and she, like everybody thinks babies are precious and they're supposed to be like little rainbows and sunshine and whatnot, but I just wanted it to stop.
Yeah, it's common.
It was a dark place for me for a long time.
Yeah, and babies have this high-pitched noise that just makes them...
There's something about their cries that triggers, for me, like, aggression. And I think that's, like, an instinctual thing, because if you're not seeing your baby and suddenly they're crying, it could be danger. You know what I mean? So that instinct just kicks in that you have to act. But, shit, it was just us in the house by ourselves, so... There was that instinct would still kick up for me, and then I'd be like pissed off for because the baby was crying, and it was just the baby crying. There was no danger, so it was kind of frustrating.
Makes me always wonder how humans survived. Like I can imagine being out in the woods with this little thing that's just ringing a dinner bell.
Yeah,
all the time. But
well, that you just put the baby on the boob, and that's it. I mean, usually it's either hunger or they shit themselves, yeah. Or they're sleepy. But I mean, women just carry their babies all the time when they're, you know, until they're walking.
It's true. Then again, people used to have tribes and stuff like that. They had communities, so
yeah,
animals the village. Were less prone to mess with them.
And then you can just hand off the baby to grandma or your sister or whatever, and just make take a babies. Break. But I was by myself. I was doing everything all by myself. So that was a load. It was a lot.
Yeah, that is. Yeah, I know I was younger, my mom told me stories about that, where she would just lock herself in the bathroom to get away from me. She was like, I don't know, like, well, when I was about 2 or something like that, so I was really young.
This one just ends up banging on the door for hours.
That's what kids do. You ever see Family Guy where Stewie's trying to get his mom's attention and he just says mom for like 3 minutes straight?
Yeah, and she's just like laying there like...
dead inside.
Waiting. That is so relatable.
She's like, I can't wait for this death thing.
Death can't come soon enough.
So,
but yeah, I think a lot of people just jump to that immediately without seeing what could the other possibilities.
Yeah, and that's kind of that's what life does. It's going to sound like Mufasa, but you know, the circle of life. It creates space for the new. So,
mm-hmm. Yep. So that's to say that there's nothing wrong with thinking that way, but you have to learn to use it in a constructive way. Yeah.
Unfortunately, people get suicidal too, which I really don't think people ever get to the point where they really want to die. It's just that mm-hmm. they want conditions to be different.
Yeah.
Like, I think the suicidal feelings, for the most part, are an aspect of yourself that you wish you didn't have to deal with. Like, it's part of... It's you wanting to kill a part of yourself.
Right. And
you probably don't know how to do it, so it gets kind of murked into you wanting to just end your existence, which, you know, that's a waste. So...
Yeah. Well, you can't change anything if you're dead. If you're dead, you're just dead.
Yeah.
That's the end. That's it. No chance for change.
Yeah.
Never gave it a chance.
That was something I always felt bad about for, like, in Christianity. Like, it was always thought that if you kill yourself, that you go straight to hell because you can't repent. It's like, well, you know, if you if you just get out of a brothel and get hit by a bus, you can't repent either. So it's like, well.
But also, it's like squandering the gift that God gave you, yeah, life.
That's true.
So that's like the ultimate F you to the higher power.
And I was always like kind of, I would always overthink these things. I'm like, well, what if you're like about to die and you just do it? Like, let's say there's a serial killer or something that puts you in an oven, and yeah, you have to have a gun on you. You're going to be like, oh, thank God I have this this way out, opposed to just baking slowly, you know?
Mm. But then some would say that you're undermining God's will.
Yeah, and that's part of why I'm not a Christian anymore.
Because what if he sent down like an angel or something, an agent to like fucking save you, and you never, you still offed yourself. You know what I mean? When he was already on his way to saving you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true. You really never know until it happens.
Yeah. But if it's God's will, then it's God's will. You let it play out. That's what's supposed to happen.
You ever seen the movie The Mist?
Sounds familiar, but I don't think I ever saw it.
Oh, the ending is pretty much that. Like, it's a spoiler alert if you haven't seen The Mist. It's not a great movie. It's okay. It ends like that. There's like this catastrophe happening, and things look glim, and basically someone ends up killing themselves, and right after that, help comes. So if they had held on for like 10 minutes more,
ooh,
everything would have been okay.
Yeah.
So I shouldn't laugh, but that's life. Life is absurd and ironic on a macro scale.
Uh-huh.
But
messy stuff.
Yeah, I haven't had to deal with that either. I don't think anybody I've known has ever killed themselves. So I've been pretty lucky in that regards.
Mm.
Have you known anybody that's committed suicide?
No, they didn't go through with it, but they did attempt it. My mom slit her wrist, or not her wrist, but like the inside of her elbow, higher up, when I was about 9.
Yikes.
And then, so from there, she was institutionalized for about 3 months. So I was living with, we were already living with my aunt and uncle on my dad's side.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad had a great habit of just up and like leaving and going to Mexico for like a month. And I think she was just having like a really rough time with it. And I think there were some drugs involved as well. Like, she's always been, like, she's always smoked weed and stuff. But I think there were some harder substances involved there where she was, like, going through a deep depression. And then, so she slit her wrist. Or not her wrist, but her elbow. And then, so she was institutionalized for a while. And then they kind of fixed her. And after she got out, my parents had, like, a huge blow-up fight. Over, I don't remember what, but probably because he left and then came back and just everything was all hunky-dory, whatever. So they never really processed that until after she got out. So that was that's like the only thing that I can recall as far as suicide. But they've always had like the self-destructive habits anyway. So, but that was a big traumatic thing for me because, well, I don't think they really told me what had happened until we went to go visit her in the hospital. We'd go visit her like every few days. They would allow visits, and I came to find out later. And then, but during that time, I was without her. Like, I had never been without her for an extended period. So for 3 months, it was like a huge grieving process for me. And yeah. I remember at one point they said that she was going to get out and they were going to assess her first. And they said that she might get out of the hospital, and then they didn't. There was still something there that they assessed that she still wasn't right. So they kept her for like another month. And I was just fucking torn apart. So
you said you were around 9 years old when all this happened?
Yeah, I think it was like 9. Probably 8.
At the time, did they tell you while she was in the hospital, like specifically, or did you figure this out later?
I think I figured it out once she was already institutionalized. So I didn't find out right away after she was gone, after she, like, they institutionalized her. And I didn't see any of the, like, the gore and blood and stuff, apparently. There was a lot of that. I think either my aunt or uncle had found her, like, on the bathroom floor or something. Mm. And they called the ambulance, and then they took her away. Something like that. I'm not too familiar with the details, but I assume that's who found her and who took her. How she got institutionalized. But yeah, and it was like a long trip for us too. I don't think we had a car at that time, so we had to ride the bus all the way to fucking wherever the fuck it was. So that was like a big deal to go visit her anyway. Yeah. So that was rough. And I feel like at that point there was like a detachment on my part. It was like a legit grieving of her dying. Like having that being separated. Mm-hmm. So I don't feel like after that I really attached myself, reattached the same way.
Yeah, that's understandable when you go through that type of stress.
Especially with the knowledge that she did it to herself. So I was not happy with her for a while after that.
Yeah, it's kind of a dark thing to realize with that person in one way or another is partially like out the door. Like. Mm-hmm. So part of you starts kind of getting ready for that preparation.
Yeah, it was like touch and go for a while. So like, are you going to fucking try to kill yourself again? What the fuck? Just do it. Like anytime she'd get all crazy.
Yeah. But
yeah, I had a lot of resentment about that for a while. Even not really acknowledging it, but just like feeling it. I don't know, my subconscious, I guess.
Yeah, that's understandable. That's normal. People get resentful of people that are suicidal. That's why when people kind of talk about mental health, it always kind of rings empty to me because the average person, they don't want to deal with people that are mentally ill because we have a pretty sick society. Everybody's a little narcissistic and
you might rub off
anxiety. So everyone's barely kind of staying afloat themselves. So you have somebody else bump into you. It's like, oh, well, now you got to deal with this shit. So, and it's, you know, people will call it selfish or whatever and say nobody cares, but that's how people are. Like, that's the normal state of being. And it's just, people start drowning, and if they can't stay afloat, they start panicking and trying to lash out to anything to hold on to anything. And sometimes that's the people that's around them. Yep.
Your ass, too. Yeah.
Yeah, and sometimes they can pull you down, too. So, it takes...
Gotta watch out.
Yeah, definitely. I remember joking with a friend about the fact that they say that narcissists can become therapists. And I'm like, well, I think it can be kind of useful because if you don't have the empathy, then you could be very clinical in these situations. You don't have to deal with all the emotional turmoil that someone that's in the maelstrom of emotion is capable of subjecting you to. So...
Yeah, feelings just get in the way a lot with that. I remember thinking when I was in college that I could not be a therapist. I was going through too much at the time anyway. So I tended to gravitate more towards like the research side of it just because of that. I was like, I don't want to fucking deal with anybody's stories and shit. Like, I can't.
I got into psychology. I don't know. It was like a bunch of just breadcrumbs that kind of led me there. Like, everybody gets in I think a lot of people get in because they want to figure out something about themselves. And me, since I wrestled with depression and being suicidal when I was like a teenager and early 20s and stuff like that, I was trying to figure out why do I feel this way? And I eventually started, it was kind of around a couple girlfriends. I started reading some things that made me think more about how people's way of thinking works. Like one of the best books I read, I guess it was kind of that. Yeah, thinking back on it, it was probably the first like mental health book I read. It was a book about borderline personality disorder. It was called "I Hate You, Don't Leave Me."
I have that.
That's a great book, and that was. After I read that book, it made a lot of things make sense. Like, I saw things that I was doing that I couldn't really I couldn't see the bigger picture of, because especially when you're drowning, it's harder to see, imagine what the fuck is going on around you. But I was young and kind of a mess in a lot of ways. So, but I read that book, and I was also dealing with girlfriends that were, they were kind of messed up too, because we were both on that same frequency. So I got into that, and once you started fixing yourself, that's one of those things that it's interesting how your circle changes, because it's harder to relate to people. Like, it's hard to relate to the same people. You have to end up killing off those relationships. So if you can appreciate if you can appreciate everything as a lesson or a potential teacher, you can frame these things in a way where they don't really make you sad to know that none of your relationships are permanent. So and you can appreciate them too, because they're like a firework. You know, what the fuck would a firework look like if it never went away?
Just be annoying as hell. But yeah, try to extract the meaning out of whatever, you know, situation. There's always something there. Make lemonade out of lemon.
Yeah, definitely.
But more along the lines of, like, marriage advice, I've heard something similar, that relationships cannot be unevenly yoked. And I think it's a biblical thing.
It is, yeah.
That's to say that...
I don't remember the exact quote, but that is a biblical quote.
Yeah. That's to say that you have to both be working together for the same purpose, for the same goal. Like, you can't... It just doesn't work if only one person's carrying the relationship, or if the other one is, or, you know... Or even if you're just trying to, like, I don't know, like, go back to school and further your career and stuff like that. If the other person's not supporting you...
In some way.
For the greater good. Yeah, in some way, it's not gonna last. It's not gonna hold together.
Yeah, if they're not entertaining or recharging you, then that's a sign that relationship is kind of, it's not something you really need to hold on to.
And anytime that one or the other is trying to do more or whatever, it kind of throws things off balance. So there needs to be, like, some form of equilibrium. So there's always, like, an adjustment that needs to be made on the other person's behalf to accommodate, you know? But as long as you're both working together, then that's the key thing.
Yeah. And
so same thing with friendships. It's like you were trying to better yourself, but they weren't. So it's like you kind of just have to, it doesn't stay.
Yeah, like, and it's kind of weird when you get off that frequency, because I know after the 2016 election, you know, since I'm a right-leaning libertarian, it's all the flack I got for, you know, plus I'm black, so not being a leftist, like, I had to deal with all the things that came up with my friends, and I went through a lot of different things at the time, and I remember one of my friends, like, saying, like, you've changed, and I was on such a different way of thinking at that point, and it just more so confused me instead of agitating me. I'm like, well, yeah, it's good, because you know, the only time you don't change is when you're dead, so not changing is death. So and you know, him being such a being how he was, I get the way of thinking, but you can't really change someone's way of thinking. When I was younger, after I started learning all those things about psychology, I did want to do something with it. Like, I didn't know what, though. Even if it was just kind of, like, learning how to hopefully provide my friends with some type of way of thinking that could help them feel better. Mm. Or just, you know, having my goofy, absurd sense of humor. Like, just making people laugh whenever I can with terrible jokes. So, but yeah, when it came to all that, it's crazy, because once you start fixing those things about yourself, you can kind of spot things in other people, and especially if you're in like a chaotic household, if you start changing something about yourself,
they don't like it.
They don't like it.
Because you're reflecting, I mean, it makes their chaos all the more apparent. Yeah,
the brighter you get, the darker their shadows get. So
yeah, pretty much.
That contrast becomes much more noticeable. Like, I know Jordan Peterson had a quote about, if you're in a fucked up household. Okay, that's not a Jordan Peterson quote.
Don't quote him directly.
Yeah, definitely not quote him directly. Paraphrasing the point. Jordan Peterson, he said something to the effect that if you're in a messed up household and you start just trying to clean your room, you'll garner like all this negative attention. And I mean, I got to experience that firsthand when growing up with my mom, who was a hoarder, and once we got bed bugs, I started trying to throw away junk, and she threatened to call the police on me. So
literally, like, you were trying to clean your room.
So I was trying to clean my mom's room and some of the house, and so and that's the sad thing too, is that people don't really mean to be exploitive of one another. It's just they lack self-awareness. Like, if you don't have the capacity to think about other people, you have from all these
from their perspective.
You have all these blind spots, and what you're doing isn't really beneficial, but you'll be thinking that what you're doing is, because you can always see things from your point of view.
So. Yeah, it definitely takes a bit of maturity to get there. Like, I can remember thinking, feeling really pissed off just because Jason didn't know what I was thinking. And then, one day I had this, like, just light bulb go off, like, oh, he's not a mind reader.
So.
And I'm not communicating.
Yeah, and the sad thing is a lot of people, they don't get to not everybody gets that light bulb. They're just like, man, everybody but me sucks.
Yeah.
It's like a bunch of misanthropes that walk around saying they hate people, but it's like, well, I'm sure you're pretty shitty too in a lot of ways, because we all suck in different ways.
So. Mm-hmm. It's a painful way to go about living life.
It is.
It is painful.
And that's another thing too that kind of comes, like, I saw that with a buddy of mine when I started talking to one of his younger brothers. You know, he had shared with me a story about how he had been treated when he was younger, and my friend, his response was to instantly kind of shut down that way of thinking instantly, because it's harder to acknowledge that what you went through was, you know, abuse. And people do tend to abuse each other even if they're not aware of it, and the fact that you think that you're not doing it ever is probably going to make you... It widens that blind spot for you to actually do it if you think that you're perfect. So...
Yeah. To poorly paraphrase Jordan Peterson, it's like, if you don't accept your shadow self, then all if you don't see yourself as a villain, you're never going to be able to surmount it. Yeah. To overcome it and to combat it, to be better.
Yeah.
Your blind spot.
And for me, definitely, when I had, like, my politics change, I don't know, when I was a leftist, I used to just think that if we didn't have safety nets, that people would just die. Like, that was how fucking deluded I was.
How did we ever make it this far? It's like, yeah. Without safety nets.
But these people will literally just fall over and kill over. They won't try to survive or anything. So, but that was my deluded socialist way of thinking when I was younger. But I kind of lost my train of thought. But going back to what you said about recognizing yourself, I know one of my favorite quotes from Carl Jung is, until you make the unconscious conscious, it will direct your life and you will call it fate.
Ooh. Yeah.
A lot of people feel like they're just kind of spun around in these circumstances because they walk through life with blinders on. And especially if you're dealing with someone that's suicidal, like, after Buddhism and libertarianism both kind of made me appreciate responsibility, and you start realizing that, you know, there's more freedoms in being able to be more responsible.
Yeah.
I realize that when people are in their darkest, that's one of the hardest things to commit to really get them to understand, is that probably 95% of the suffering in your life is created by you.
created by you and or not prevented when you could have prevented it. Like, people have much more control over things than they give themselves credit for, just because shying away from responsibility being uncomfortable. But it's also empowering. Like, I think a lot of people don't appreciate that about it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it can be tough. It's always going to be tough, especially at first when you haven't got the hang of it. But after a while, and you look back and it's like, yeah, I'm better for it.
Yeah, it's a gradual thing. Like, you start off small and eventually it changes. Nobody's perfect, though. You know, if you try to predict and control every potential outcome in life, you'll probably go insane. But and that's another thing, too. Trying to control everything is, you know, it's kind of like a, you know, like a marriage of anxiety and delusion. So you have to accept that the unexpected will happen, because it's just how the universe works. So at least for me, what really got me out of, like, most of my depression and suicidal thinking when I was younger was just learning to kind of let go of things and to realize that nothing lasts forever. So if you're going through something bad, it ends because it started, you know? That's how everything works in our world. If, you know, like they say in The Matrix, everything that has a beginning has an end, Neo.
Well, when I had my angry period, it's like, once you're in that frequency for so long, it becomes your norm. And it's kind of hard to imagine yourself feeling any differently, you know? So then that becomes your reality. But it's not something that you're not able to change. Like, one of the things that even here just recently, like in the last few months, that I adopted into my mindset was gratitude and being grateful for XYZ, you know, whatever I have going on around me, just appreciating the little thing. Because what happens is, like, in your brain, it's impossible for you to feel angry and grateful at the same time. Like your brain, it just doesn't. You can't do it.
I'm trying to imagine the situation, and it's hard to imagine being angry and grateful at the same time.
Yeah, you can't. So if you just automatically flip that switch to, okay, what list the things that you're grateful for right in this moment, at this time, then you start to feel a change and you start to feel a possibility of, you know, feeling better.
Yeah.
Well, but that's been one of the most useful tools that I've adopted here recently.
Definitely. It's like, like I said, if you can see something bad happening and you just kind of play it through your mind and start looking at what the good is that's going to come out of it, you'll relax a lot easier. Like, I told you about that story, the egg, where the guy, his wife was relieved that he died in the wreck because now she doesn't have to divorce him. So if you can kind of own up to your thoughts and your emotions and understand why they are the way they are, you alleviate a lot of stress in your mind. And
yeah,
another thing too is try to be kind of very honest with yourself too.
Brutally.
Like, yeah. Well, I'm kind of going in a different direction, but yeah, being brutally honest with yourself, that's important. But what I mean too is to be really truthful in your way of thinking, and you start breaking up, like, bad patterns of thinking that can get you sucked into depression. Like, when I was reading about borderline personality disorder, I dated a girl who got diagnosed with borderline personality disorder and PTSD. And I read that book around when we started dating. I heard about it a little bit before, but it made me think of things a lot differently. So one thing that they use to help that is something called dialectical behavioral therapy. And that's, at least the way I understood it to be, it's like you kind of monitor your thoughts in a way to make sure that they're actually accurate. Because if you have like a thought like, oh, nothing ever goes right for me, well, that's not true. Because one, if you look around, there's a lot of things that are going well. Like, you know, you didn't die in a sinkhole that just caved in under you right when you said that. You know, an asteroid didn't hit the planet. So there's a lot of things that are going right for you at the moment. So if you make it harder for your mind to have, I don't want to say dishonest, but maybe misinformed statements or things that just aren't as true as they could be. That starts to crack up the darkness that can happen when you're in those bad states. So,
yeah, your emotions are not the truth.
Yeah, your thoughts aren't the truth, and your emotions aren't the truth, and neither of them are you. They're just kind of like things that happen internally that you experience, but experience starts and stops. So that's an important thing to always remember, and that's one of the cool things about life being long or short, however you view it.
The years, the days are long, but the years are short.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not going to be forever. And whenever people are suicidal, I don't think that they are suicidal. I think they're just craving change. Like, they're just really craving change. So killing that part of themselves that's putting them in a bad place or a bad mind frame, absolutely, that's great. And that's probably what they want to do. But to throw the baby out with the bathwater, I'm sure that that's not exactly what they want. So,
Yeah, kill the bad parts, keep the good parts. There's some people that try to like completely reinvent themselves, like after something happens. And I feel like that will backfire in most cases because it's just too much change. You know what I mean? Like, you have to be intentional about it, and you have to decipher what's working and what's not, and you have to be really reflective and in order to make those distinctions of what's working and what's not. But to just completely reinvent yourself, unless you're like in an imminent death situation, it's like you want to be gentle with it. You want to make small changes, make small sustainable changes. Yeah. And eventually get there.
You definitely don't want to overwhelm yourself if you're having trouble starting. That's like saying, I don't know how to swim, so I'm just going to jump into an ocean with no one watching. It's like, I mean, you're going to figure it out. Or if you don't, then it won't be an issue for long that you don't know how to swim.
So, yeah, you got to walk before you can run with that one.
What do you think about the whole assisted suicide thing?
Oh. See, we just got through talking about all that. I mean,
because you know, I try not to be too dogmatic about my thinking, because I think that's when you're capable of doing the most evil. But that is one
like
thing.
Thinking religiously. You mean?
Well, rigidly thinking, like rigidly, whatever your personal code or lines are, always have a little bit of flexibility to them, because things that don't bend, they shatter like glass, so.
I mean, it depends on the situation. Like, here lately, I've been kind of more skeptical about the medical community and doctors' stuff in general. Like, they don't know everything. They're just following a protocol and what they learn in medical school and, you know, what their higher-ups tell them. And, they have systematic ways of dealing with diseases and just problems that pop up. But, so, I mean, they might advise pulling the plug on somebody that's been in a coma for X amount of time, and just because there's no sign of life or whatever. And then you get all these stories, you know, miraculous stories of people waking up years later. I mean, that's not...
Oof, that's a rough one.
Yeah, that's what came to my mind about assisted suicide. It's like it's essentially the same thing. And I actually had an uncle pass away from... traumatic brain injury in a motorcycle accident in Mexico. So they pronounced him brain dead. They had to pull the plug for, I mean, he was brain dead. So they told them that there was no hope of him ever resuscitating or whatever. He was on assisted life support and all that. So, I mean, it's rough because they weren't financially able to. It's different over there, so they weren't financially able to sustain him anyway.
Yeah, I imagine that's expensive too. If they're having
to keep him alive, yeah. Yep.
the...
So it's...
Go on.
It's on a case-by-case scenario, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's kind of one of the important things, too. Like, people need to be willing to kind of talk to each other about the things that are not easy to talk about. Because, at least for me, when my mom died, that was actually one thing we were actually good about, is that we had talked about that beforehand. Is like, if one of us were ever in a situation where we were going to lose brain function in a coma or on life support, what would we want?
Mm.
And we ended up having that conversation because my grandmother was in a bad state in the hospital, and my mom was all freaking out and everything.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, well, she's you know, just praying. She's like, God, please don't make me have to make this decision because it's too big. You know, it's not something that she wants to deal with.
Right.
And I'm like, well, you guys never spoke about it? And she's like, no. And it's one of those moments where you kind of you're kind of frustrated at your family for not being a little more
clear about it.
I don't know, like, right, prepared.
Like, yeah.
So I'm like, oh, okay, well, I asked my uncle, and he's like, I don't know. So I'm like, you guys are all
messed. You can't put this on me. How are you going to put that on the? Oh, man.
So, yeah, after that.
I'd be like, yep, figure it out, peace.
I mean, I basically told her my thoughts after, because I'm like, you know, if I was ever in that situation, I don't want to be brought back if I'm going to lose brain function, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to go through that if I'm going to be paralyzed or anything like that. I would just rather go ahead and pass on to the next life. So just do what if the next set just, of experiences.
What if it's just like a stroke and you can like still recover some function after? And
if I can't walk, if I can't use my limbs, I wouldn't want to deal with it.
Mm. What if your speech is weird, like you can't, or like your memory, like some people that have strokes, they have trouble with thinking and just processing and talking and stuff like that.
Probably wouldn't want to deal with that either. Because, I mean, I always think about quality of life over quantity of life. That's always my thing. So, you know, that's one of my favorite Benjamin Franklin quotes is, wish not to live long, but to live well. So, or as they say in rap songs now, I'm here for a good time, not a long time.
There you go.
Basically, that's my way of thinking. I looked out with my mom that we had that conversation. So when she had her stroke and the doctor said that, hey, there's no way of coming back, I knew exactly what I needed to do. And there was no
guilt there.
There was no guilt. There was no, it was like, okay, well, I just gotta do this. And even then, like, I was kind of in a pinch because religiously, killing your parents in Buddhism is a big no-no.
Oh.
Yeah, like...
Did you ever talk to any of the Buddhist monks about it? Did you ever go back?
I was vaping. But, no, my vape is leaking. And these Nords, they look like crazy. But...
Can't endorse the Nords.
I mean, they're cheap, so that's the good thing about them. But yeah, no, I didn't seek any counseling or anything like that. I just knew it would have to be done. And I knew I wasn't going to get any wisdom from my uncle or my grandmother, really. I decided just to go ahead and ask them about it. How did they feel in case one of us was in that situation? And my uncle's like, well, as long as I got money in the bank, keep me alive.
He wants to spend every last cent, huh?
Pretty much.
That's funny.
And my grandmother, she said no, that she wouldn't want to. My grandmother's super religious, so she was like, no, 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 God's going to fix it. God's going to fix it.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like,
So neither of them wants the plug pulled if they...
Yeah, but legally, the decision came down to me, and I'd already known what my mom wanted, so...
Mm-hmm.
That was
wow.
To make the choice with a clear conscience.
Well, that's good.
But even in Buddhism, too, like, they don't encourage... There's kind of a debate on that. I heard one monk, it was interesting how he phrased it. He called it masculine compassion versus feminine compassion.
Ooh.
And the story that he told was there was a pony that was born, a baby horse or young horse, and the thing was having trouble walking. And all the women in the, I don't know what you call a herd of horses. Is herd the right word? Probably. But
yeah, the herd.
The community of horses. They kept coming to this little pony that couldn't walk, and they would nudge it and try to get it to stand up. And they never really could do it. So after a couple of days of them having that happen, the male horse just comes over and just stomps its brains in.
Oh my gosh.
So, well, see, and that's kind of an interesting, you know, dynamic between reaction. The sexes. Yeah. Is that mm-hmm. the women are like, oh my God, you killed it or whatever. And the guy's like, what, do you want a predator to give it a slow death like this or what? You know, mm-hmm. you gave it something quick and clean.
I mean, so. There's still going to be scavengers coming around, but.
Well, I mean, I don't care what eats my body if I'm not here to feel it.
So. Yeah, yeah. So. Oh, so the males, I don't know if this is the way the horse brain works, but
well, it's, for yeah, us it's,
higher level thinking beings, it's like, end the suffering. Yeah, you suffer too when you're seeing that. When you're seeing someone else suffer, your empathy kicks in.
For some people.
Yeah, yeah, if you're not a psychopath. But it's like you're suffering too.
I mean, even if you're not a psychopath, sometimes if you know that someone's suffering is self-inflicted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it depends.
You have like an unattached empathy. It's like, mm-hmm. it sucks that they're in that they got themselves lost in that maze. Mm-hmm. But you know that you can't fix the world.
Yeah. I had that going with a friend of mine that was struggling with alcoholism. And it was like, I just couldn't feel bad for her because the things that were happening were completely preventable. So I just kind of stopped talking to her. Just a ghost. I tend to ghost.
Yeah, that's what people do nowadays. It's with social media and the way everyone's connected, people just kind of cut each other, which if they're shitty people, it's a good thing to do.
Yeah. I had a lot of guilt about it for a while because I mean, I did try to like talk to her and let her talk out her problems, but it got to a point where it was always her talking about her crap. And it was just always a downer. It was like getting to be around her was always a downer. So I just didn't want that.
Yeah, she was just taking and not giving.
Leaking into me, yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Like, when people are sinking, I mean, if you're not strong enough to swim with you and her, then you need to do what's best for yourself. Because that person, yeah. They're just rocking the boat.
I was not emotionally equipped to deal with her stuff at the time.
Yeah.
But I did have a lot of guilt about it. It was like, I could have been a better friend. I could have tried. I could have done this. I kind of communicated better. Like, hey, maybe don't always talk about your problems sometimes because I have stuff too. And I'm like one of those people who like,
well,
just...
you know, the world, it doesn't just revolve around you, right?
Yeah, exactly. But how do you fucking say that, you know, when you see somebody just always going through stuff? Yeah. And if I did feel like I was in a bit of a better position to be more accommodating that way, but I don't know. I'd had enough, and I was gonna have another baby, so I was like, I'm not gonna have time to sustain this
baby and your husband and everything. So
yeah, it's like I got shit going on.
Yeah,
real shit. I got real fucking problems here. Your little kid shit that you got going on.
Give her the thoughts and prayers. Send in positive vibes.
Good luck with that. Have fun with it.
Yeah. So.
You've got to leave
wishes.
The
crazy
behind.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know what you're supposed to do when the society keeps producing more and more of them. And they're all entitled. So it's like, you know, I keep using the metaphor of like a maelstrom and sinking. But, you know, it's kind of interesting because, yeah, if you're going down in a maelstrom, it does look like the world only revolves around you. Mm-hmm. So there you go.
Yeah, it's like we have too much of a safety net to hit an actual rock bottom, like the danger of losing your job or, you know, just whatever may come as a consequence of not taking care of business or whatever. It's not as real as it used to be, you know, I don't know, 100 years ago.
Yeah, it's
even 50 years ago.
Like,
so we have too much of a safety net for people to really hit that true rock bottom for them to make make real changes, I feel.
And people too, like if people could work together better, like they wouldn't really have that many financial problems, so to say. Like, I would still like to see us not get taxed to death like we are now, but even then, as it is, if people were able to just cooperate better and there were families more cohesive, you could suffer through those bad times a lot easier because you'd have people there. It's just now we have a highly individualized society that
No support systems.
Yeah, no support systems and people. Everything is just the government trying to force this artificial compassion. So
That's something that I noticed as I was just scrolling through YouTube or something, and I've noticed in like Asian communities, they're very family oriented. And the fact that that seemed to stand out to me is like a testament to how individualized we have become. Like, at least me personally also. I don't really stay in touch with family that much, but it's also because they're toxic as fuck.
I lucked out. My parents kind of died when my dad got murdered when I was in middle school. And then my mom, she died when I was, middle-aged. So, I was, well into adult when she died. So my relationship, I don't get what Bruce Wayne is always complaining about.
So, I don't know if I should say it, but I don't, if you remember when we first kind of started chatting, and I was still living at my mom's and dealing with her bullshit.
Yeah, I remember what you told me.
What did I say? Wait, what do you remember?
You think it would be kind of easier if they were to go ahead and move on? So,
well, when it was around the time that your mom passed away too, yeah. And I was like, "Damn, he's lucky."
Yeah, see, like, if you can appreciate those differences in people, like, there's zen in that. There's a fucking reason why all these zen riddles sound like fucking jokes, because life is, it's funny.
I was like, you're lucky.
I remember when I was younger, one of my my best friends, like, I used to, like, he was always with his family, and me, I didn't have any friends, really. I was a loner. And I always wish I had that, and now it's like the opposite. I appreciate not having to deal with people I don't like. It makes it kind of rough sometimes because I feel like I have to, and I'm not like, I don't think I'm an abrasive asshole or anything like that, but I feel like I have to kind of play society when I'm around people and compensate for niceness, and I don't like that. I don't like having conversations that are just people making sounds with their heads.
So. I hear noises, but I'm not really there with you. Yeah, I get it. So. Yeah, I just have too much going on to really have time for a social life at the moment. But hopefully that'll change. That'll have to change if I go in the direction that I need to go.
Yeah. And, and saying all this, though, I don't hate people. I think people are capable of quite a bit. It's just... I swear they walk around with blindfolds on, and then they just say stuff that they don't think about what's coming out of their mouth. So
it's like everybody's saying shit that they think other people wants to hear, and none of it is genuine.
Yeah, exactly. You get a society of smiles with tears behind it. So
the tragedy of the clown or whatever.
Yeah. It's, I think I don't know what the phrase is, but I get what you're trying to get across. Clown's plight. I know it was an Eminem song, or was that Mariah Carey and Eminem when they were having this feud that no one cares when the tears of a clown fall or something?
Oh.
Yeah. And it's kind of true. Like, if you're always emotional, then it's kind of, eventually you just tune it out. So.
Well, because everyone expects the clown to always be happy and cracking jokes and shit,
Yeah, I remember this girl I knew for a while. she was always just a mess. Like, every time there was a social gathering with all of our friends and everything, she always just ended crying and drunk and on the floor or whatever. So I'm like, okay, this is just how these people are. But there was a time when another one of my friends, I was at his house that, he was playing Rocket League, and he said something like, "Oh, she's crying." And I'm like, "Oh, what is she not crying?" Not to be mean or anything, but it was just like, "Yeah, I'm sure she is."
Yeah,
that happens.
You get used to the way that the person's behavior.
That's why, I don't know, some of these, like, reaction videos on social media, where it's just, like, a woman that's outraged and she's just crying. I'm like, okay, well, it's about how that goes.
Yeah. Social media is funny, because you only see a snapshot of that person's life. It's not all transparent. It's just what they want to show you, what they want to upload.
One of my buddies from when I was younger, lost touch with him. I hate that I lost touch with him, but we had a conversation about that. We were trying to think of, like, the evolutionary reason for crying. Like, why does it exist? Because it seemed like it doesn't mean anything. Like, what, you have, like, water coming out of your eyes and water salty and it makes it hard to see. It's like, why does this happen? And we couldn't really figure it out. Then finally he said, I think it's just a signal that you need help. And I'm like, that actually makes sense.
For sure. The babies. It's a remnant. No, the remnant of babies.
Yeah, well, both.
Would take care of us.
Yeah, I mean, both. Like, it's just supposed to be when you're young or incapable. That's really the only thing you can do. And, I'm not cry-shaming if that's a thing. And I'm sure the leftists will turn that into a thing. Sooner or later, it's fine to fucking cry. But at the same time...
Everybody cries.
Yeah, everybody cries.
Everybody farts and shit.
It's fine to have your catharsis or whatever. It's just also try to see what you can do to feel better. So
yeah, don't linger in it.
Yeah, because dwelling, it doesn't do anything if you're just going through the same thoughts and not thinking of doing anything new. And it's hard. Like, it's hard to sometimes see it because your habits build walls around you. It becomes your programming. The more you do the same things, it's harder and harder to change.
Yeah, we have, I heard it through, it's a neurology thing, but we have, like, these mirror neurons that where when we see somebody behaving a certain way or talking a certain way, like inflections, like more in like a workplace environment, we adopt that way of being to, I guess, fit in. You know what I mean? The mirror neurons make us... It's just like an automatic neurological thing. So,
that kind of makes me think of... Go on and finish your thought.
In a way, getting away from certain crowds and certain people is breaking away from you wanting to be that way. And then, but not only that, taking it to the next level and surrounding yourself with better people will make you better in that same, you know, on that same plane because of mirror neurons. So surrounding yourself with a better crowd is like, it is a fix, but you have to be outnumbered. That's the numbers part of it, is that it has to be a literal crowd of people.
I've always heard that expression that you're the average of the five people or so that you spend the most time with.
Yep.
So that's what I was going to interrupt with, but pretty much on the same vibe there.
Mm-hmm. Which is why I'm kind of looking forward to starting a career in real estate and stuff, because I want to get around there. It seems like a really positive crowd because they're all working together. There's no, it's not a competitive thing. It's like they have to work together if anybody wants to win. So it's a very, it's like a team. It's like a big team. There's a lot of positivity in it. So I kind of look forward to that aspect of it.
That's a good environment to work in, because it kind of sucks working in an environment where everyone's trying to make everybody else look bad and make themselves look better. Like,
right.
I remember back when I worked surveillance for the jewelry corporation, I was one of those things, just dealing with all the gossip and stuff that I really didn't care about. And then if I didn't talk to someone enough, they'd get offended and start crying to the managers. Jeez.
Which I think a lot of companies do, do like seminars for like team building exercises where they put the people that they want working together, working more efficiently and better into situations. Like, they go to like an offsite, boardroom. Basically, or like a game room or something like that, where they put them into like these scenarios they get to play around, and it's team building, you know, and then they come back and they're better at it. They're better at their work and they're all working together. But you have to form, you have to put them in those situations outside of work for that to happen.
Yeah, for them to form some type of bond. I think that happens a lot on sitcoms where the companies will go like on a team building retreat or something like that.
The Office.
They did that on The Simpsons.
Did they?
Burns had them go on a skiing retreat or something like that. They went to a ski resort. Uh-huh. It was that episode where with Flanders, where he's like, I feel like I'm wearing nothing at all. Nothing at all. I think it was, I'm pretty sure it was that same episode. But yeah, that's a common TV trope. And it's true. It's good to have, it's nice working around people that are on the same page and having a good team. Like one of my last jobs, so I actually liked the team I was working with. They were all pretty fun, except for one girl. She was, I don't know if something died in her or what the deal was with her.
But yeah, that job was more physical than your cubicle job.
Yeah.
So it's funny to me that just being around and moving things around and everybody working together was a team building exercise.
That's true. Like a friend of mine had been recommending that I watch Office Space, the movie, and I finally watched it, and it was kind of similar because offices are just weird places. You see all these signs saying smile, all these women have like be positive written on their desk. It's like,
well, it's literally like
stuff, but it's
such a sterile environment that like your brain wants to fill it with, you know, whatever, just something.
Yeah, but it's kind of weird to me that everybody's just all putting up the same thing, so it looks kind of culty. So, but yeah,
but I can imagine like in an office where there's not a whole lot going on as far as action aside from the dry.
Yeah, people still want to show their individuality. Like you'll have some girls who have like a pierced eyeball and orange and purple hair or something like that.
Pierced eyeball.
So. But, yeah, what I really related to that movie is that, you know, after that job ended, a friend of mine, I went to, he tried me out at helping him do his fencing gig. And we were outside when it was freezing or when it was muddy, and it was still kind of fun. Like, it was crazy. Mm-hmm. It was a huge contrast. Mm-hmm. And I remember, like, my first day, he brought along another one of his coworkers who didn't speak much English. And I'm sitting there trying to lift all these T-posts, and these are pretty fucking heavy. Mm-hmm. I was trying to lift, like, I don't know, I think, like, 3 or 4 at a time or something like that. And my other friend was carrying 2, and he's like, bring more. And I'm like, how many do you need me to bring? And he yells back, 15. And I'm like, 15? And then, I didn't know it at the time, but he was just messing with me. He yells back, 50. So I said, at first I said, 15, shit. And then he goes, 50. And I'm like, 50? Fuck. And his friend that didn't speak English hears it, and he just started laughing. He's, the rest of the day, he's like, 15, shit, 50, fuck. So, yeah, I think when you're all stressed out and stuff like that, it actually move it around. It's a little harder to let the micro bullshit get to you, so everybody's just having more fun.
Yeah, for sure. There's less room for psychological games when you're actually getting shit done.
Yeah, within the call center, though, it's just, ugh.
Yeah, there's nothing going on, and then your brain just takes over, and your mind.
And you can't have any real conversations about anything, because if you disagree with somebody, they'll be like, well, you're using colorful language, and you're
calling up HR and shit.
Yeah, exactly.
Every 5 minutes.
So, like, I had a coworker back at the office job. They had asked me what I did over, I don't know, like, I think it was, I don't remember. I came to work or something. Like, oh, I was like, well, what'd you do for your day or something? And I said, oh, me and a friend, we went to the shooting range for 4th of July. And she just, like, freaks out and starts shivering. I'm like, well, should I get some holy water? Or what's going on there?
Oh, sheltered self.
Yeah, so it's, people are loopy nowadays.
Well, yeah. I think a lot of the people that work in office capacities, they, like, jump off the top of the fucking building.
Yeah, I
They're
think
like, fuck this. This is not gonna
one of the Asian countries, they put nets. It's kind of messed up. Oh, they put nets around the building so the workers can't go upstairs. You get back to work.
Yeah, those It's factory like, jobs
God.
are basically slave labor. No way out.
Yeah, that's I think that
That's
originated
one of
from.
the big that's one of the big controversies for Apple, is that they employ China manufacturers. And that they have that going on. But I think as far as like the as far as the conditions at the Apple factories, they're good. They're as good as it gets for them. So
I wanted
I
to
don't
read
know.
more about corporation cities. I didn't know that those were actually a thing. I saw that thing lately that Toyota, like at the, I forgot what the CES, they showed off basically these things that they wanted to start testing at. I think it was Toyota has their own city and they have their employees working there. They were going to have drones and electric cars and stuff running around just to test the area. And I'm thinking, that sounds kind of cool, but kind of creepy at the same time. Like, even the anarcho-capitalist part of me, it kind of likes it because it's cool in its own way. But I also kind of worry about something like China. So, but if people are actually collectively responsible, they're like, hey, we won't work for this price, then the corporations can't jerk them around. Just like with the government too, if people decide that they don't want to allow something, then it won't be. But cooperation is the hard part.
Yeah, I feel like people would have less personal freedom if they're in something like that. You know, just because of the way the corporations want to run things, it's like there's too much power there. Like I
Yeah.
know in China they're already implementing the what is it called? Like the Face ID and stuff and like what is it called? The like a
Biometrics.
personal profile like online. What is it called? Credit something like
The
social
social
credit,
score?
yeah, social score,
Yeah, that's
like shit like that. That's like kind of like
Alrighty, so we're hitting the 1 hour mark. So, wanted to thank you guys for listening. And if you enjoyed your time here, please give us a like and a subscribe and leave your thoughts in the comments. We are now on Spotify and we're working on trying to get on more platforms. And we will see you guys in the next episode.
Don't die until then.
Don't die.
Later.
And if you're feeling suicidal, just figure out what you want to change. That's the key.
Yeah, just know
Talk.
that it's not forever.
Thoughts and prayers.
Thoughts and prayers.